Well, we have our first in-studio guest with us right now. This poor guy, he was supposed to join us on Monday, and a few things went down on Monday that prevented him from being here. Greg Willey with the Friendship APL. Greg, how are you, my friend?
I'm a little better now. Yeah, so I had quite the adventure on Monday. So it was, just the process of owning a nonprofit organization. You oftentimes have to wear many hats. And in this case, we are insulating our roof with a spray insulation, and I had the whole ceiling crash down on my face, and I had a little bit of swelling going on. But no, back to normal. Everything's gone down.
You've recovered very, very nicely and very quickly. But when you walked in today, I thought, wow, you could hardly even see the scar on your face because you posted this picture on Facebook a couple days ago. You were holding one of the dogs there, and I thought, holy cow. What in the world came out of the ceiling and hit you? And here today, you look like nothing happened.
Yeah, it's a little crossbar. Just speared me kind of right in the nose, and it's hard to miss my nose. It's I'm doing fine now though. So it was. I'm not worse for wear. It's not the worst injury I've received in animal welfare. That's for certain. So.
I was going to say, I'm sure you've probably endured a heck of a lot worse over the years, for sure.
Yeah, I can reenact the scene at the bottom of Boat and Jaws pretty well. I can hold my own with Quint.
With Richard Dreyfuss, right?
Yes.
There you go. Okay. Very nice. Well, you were certainly tested in the early stages of last week. When this story broke, I thought, man, we've got to get Greg in here to talk about this. So, Lilith. The boa constrictor got loose in Elyria about a week and a half ago. You guys went out there and rescued her, and thankfully Lilith's owner has come to claim her. But tell us how this all went down.
So actually, the heroes of this were Officer Vargas from the Elyria Police Department. Deserves a lot of credit on this one. So he actually had the courage when the call came in to go and tackle this snake. And he got it, grabbed it by the tail, and put it in a bag. So this is about a 6-foot long boa constrictor. And when I got there, he had the snake in a pillowcase, which the owner of the property gave to him. And he said, I'd like to get a picture with the snake. And I'm like, well, do you know what kind of snake it is? And he goes, I think it's a boa. And I'm like, well, the problem is a red-tailed boa constrictor looks exactly like a ball python. You cannot distinguish the two. Well, a boa constrictor is a constricting snake, and it'll just constrict around you, and it doesn't really bite. Ball python, if it hasn't eaten in a couple of days, is extraordinarily aggressive and will bite. And I'm like, and their markings are almost identical, and it is impossible to tell apart. And a lot of people say, well, red-tailed snake, obviously it's got a little red tail on it. Well, that's only in about 50% of them. 50% will have a little red mark on the tail, the other 50% won't. You have to kind of tell by the jawline of the snake to kind of differentiate the two. And I said, I'm not sticking my hand in that bag to find out which one it is. So I waited until I got back to the shelter, kind of dumped it out into a kind of a safer area where I could kind of assess what kind of snake it was. Once I knew it was a boa constrictor, we'd ended up getting the pictures with Officer Vargas later that afternoon because it was a fine and safe snake. And actually it was well handled. Lilith was a sweetheart, loved human contact, love just to kind of wrap around you. And like I said, once you know what you're dealing with, it's not so bad.
So the officer wanted to take a picture with the snake.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Everybody did. I actually, to be honest, we had, reporters and people and news people, and everybody came in thinking they were terrified of snakes. And by the end, everybody had a photo with this snake wrapped around them because that's how social this snake was. Even my staff, I have like 50% of my staff were super excited to have the snake in the office, and then the other 50% were terrified. But by the end, like I said, this was a very social snake, and he had handled this snake a lot. So it was, and it was not escape. It was, it seemed like coincidence, like that he had put the snake in to clean out the cage, and he didn't cover the top. And these snakes are extraordinarily strong. So a 6-foot boa constrictor is strong, but it's not dangerous enough to any large man or woman. It's just, for children, it could be. But it can push the door right open.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what happened, right? He pushed the latch right at the top of this cage right open and then just got out. So it's weird how a snake can adapt to these situations because she got out and then she just wandered on her merry way, right?
Right, so they're seeking out warmth. So as a cold-blooded animal, they're seeking out warmth. So they'll go toward, if it was a warm day, and the last warm day in a while. And then it went out into the sun to try to just kind of slither out and find a place to kind of bake in the sun and really enjoy that day and that weather. So I think many of us can appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a week and a half ago. That was the last day that the Indians played. We were down at Progressive Field, and I remember thinking, holy cow, is it hot outside? So you're right. That was the last hot day that we had, and we've been living in the 50s basically ever since.
Right,
so
right.
Makes perfect sense. You mentioned the pillowcase. I think of a 6-foot boa. How in the world does that fit in a pillowcase?
Oh, they curl up. They like actually very small, tight spaces. So they curl up and they make themselves actually fairly small. Yeah, it fit very comfortably. We could have fit 6 more feet of snake in that pillowcase.
Holy cow. And like in a regular pillowcase?
Yeah, regular pillowcase. Yeah.
Wow. All
yeah,
right.
It's a really, really interesting. Animals are very fascinating. I have so many interesting, like, really, I get to deal with so many wackadoodle things out when I'm out and about. So there was someone that kept a pet fox in a house in Elyria, and they got evicted, and where they were going, because no one would allow this, they couldn't take their pet fox with them. So they just left it in the apartment. So I had to go in and get this pet fox, and it was a fox. I mean, like, they make these weird, like, kind of chittery sounds, and not, you know, terrified, of course. I'm terrified. So we had to call our friends over at Back to the Wild in the Sandusky area, and they take wildlife, injured and orphaned wildlife, and they take it in and work with it. And they're hopefully going to make it part of their little show, like show and tell for children that come out and visit, because it had some human contact. But, I mean, seriously, people are strange, and the Doors got it right. Jim Morrison hit it right on the head. Like, it is it's a strange world out there full of strange people that keep strange and fascinating things in their house. So you have to be ready for anything.
How'd you get this fox out? I mean, when you approach a fox, you mentioned it's terrified. How you guys get the fox out of there?
So it was in a small cage when we got in. We just transferred it over to a larger cage.
Okay.
I just put on big giant gloves, because the problem really is I can't get bit by it, because they are a rabies vector animal. So the most dangerous thing I could have that would happen to this fox is that if I got bit by it, because chances are they wouldn't be able to put it up for or work with it or handle it. They would have had to euthanize it. So there was no playing around with it to see how nice it could be. I just put on gloves, transferred the fox over to the other cage, and these are big falcon gloves so that I can make sure that I don't get bit or it doesn't break skin.
Okay, so I have to drop a nasty pun in here. You have to be pretty talented to be able to pick that thing up, right?
Foxy, yeah.
that's crazy. You're right. Why would you leave the fox in the apartment? I mean, just at least give it to somebody who knows what they can do with it. It's crazy how people do these things.
It's like I said, it's just downright weird. I mean, like, there's just so many weird things that we get called in on and have to deal with. And some of it is, you know, out of compassion. We've been in apartments that had over 200 cats in the apartment. I got that call, and I was like, when I got the call from the apartment complex, I didn't actually believe them. They said, we have 200 cats in this apartment. And I told my staff, I'm like, oh yeah, they'll probably have like 20 or 30 cats in the apartment. It'll feel like 200. And I got there, and I opened the door, walked in, and I walked right back out and went, there's 200 cats in this apartment. I mean, there are cats everywhere. And, you know, and this person just wanted to help. Whenever she saw a stray cat or someone that needed help with a cat, she would take them in. And I mean, like, she just never said no. And you do see a lot of that in this, my line of work, of people that are just are so afraid of an animal being outside, or so afraid of an animal being left behind, or so afraid of an animal being euthanized at a shelter, that they take everything in and bring it into their homes. And you just see this kind of, you know, like I said, you just see, eventually you see everything when you're in this world.
No question about it. And you know, I think it's fascinating, too, because the stories you've told us, we've covered, well, snakes, cats, and foxes so far just today in the last 10
right.
minutes. But, you know, in the past, you've told us about alligators and horses. And, I mean, you've kind of done just a little bit of everything. You teased us with a shark story a little bit earlier today as well. But, I mean, you've covered a lot of ground. And I know one of the cool things that you do is you help out other areas, and other areas are able to help out you guys as well. You know, when a hurricane hits down in the south, you just never know how people are going to react. People sometimes tend to freak out because not every shelter they seek is going to be pet friendly. And as a result, they end up leaving their pets, whether it be dogs, cats, or whatever. You guys took in six dogs recently from South Carolina in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence. How does that process work for you guys?
So here's the thing. I really believe they should put a lot of the animal welfare people in control of FEMA. They are so good at what they do. So the people in animal control, a lot of the people of the Humane Society of the United States and all these different people go down to the hurricane when they know it's coming, and they start setting up shop. And they started realizing this. So New Orleans was a disaster on every scale for everybody. No one anticipated the flooding and the aftermath of that and the levees breaking. And that became just out of control. But in Texas, when the hurricanes hit in Texas last year, they had their A game on. They came in prepared. And what they did in Texas and then subsequently in South and North Carolina for Florence is they moved all the animals that are currently available in the shelters out of those shelters to recipient shelters like ours. We took in six. Other shelters took in some as well. And that makes room for the animals that are left behind so that the owners can go and reclaim their animals when they're able to move back into their properties. So the shelters were taking in animals from the disaster, and we're taking in animals that were already available for adoption from those things. And it works. It worked. It's been amazing, the animal response rate and the return to owner rate down in these places. And they're at, you know, these happy reunions. The owners have been great. But in like when Katrina hit, man, there were just dogs all and cats all over the place. Owners desperately trying to find, you know, they're in, you know, West Texas because that's where their shelter was. And they're trying to find their animal, which is now in, you know, Connecticut. And it was crazy to try to get a dog or cat back from Connecticut down to somebody that doesn't know when they're going to have a home again, doesn't know where they're going to live. They desperately want to keep their animal, and that's what we learn from it, and we never want to see happen again. So that dog would have been still right around town and easier for them to reclaim.
Well, sure, and where they're at down in the natural disaster area, they're not necessarily in a position where they can take care of their animal either. I mean, I think that's the crazy part of this. They want to get it. They want to get it back, but you've got nowhere to live. A lot of those shelters down there, they aren't exactly pet friendly, and I would imagine that just really complicates the process because you mentioned, and that really wasn't an exaggeration, you mentioned, look, if this hurricane hits West Texas, somehow, some way, your pet ends up in Connecticut. It's wild how that whole process works to me.
Yeah, and that's what, like I said, that is what they're doing to avoid at this point. So they have a whole system now. They picture every animal they pick up. They take photos of it. They chip it. They give it an identifier. They put it on a database so that everybody can go and look through the database in these various communities and find their animal and know where it's at and know where to go to get it. And a lot of these people, as weird as it is, Katrina was a rough example. Most of these people get to move back home within a very short period of time to some kind of normalcy. Like I said, Katrina was the rare example because there was the aftermath of that and the devastation of that. So that most people are able to reclaim their animal within a week or two and get back on their feet and they're ready to go. And so, you know, you just have to kind of prepare in that regard. And that's why I love, by the way, living in Cleveland. We get snow and stuff like that and it's kind of bad, but overall, we never deal with like a lot of the natural disasters that so many other places have to deal with.
Right. There's a trade-off here, right? There's a trade-off. You live up here, you've got to deal with the snow, but you don't have to worry about hurricanes. If you live a little further south of here, maybe you get some heavy winds, maybe not tornadoes per se, but you don't have to deal with that kind of disaster.
We do get the occasional tornado where we have to respond or help, but it's not like living in, you know, Oklahoma, where you know once a year some small town is going to get absolutely leveled by a tornado. So you've got to constantly be on guard for that or prepared for that eventuality. So that makes places like ours a good recipient shelter. Like places in Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania, we've become places where these animals go to find, you know, sanctuary during these disasters. So that's what, and we're not alone in that. They're, like half the shelters in Northeast Ohio are donor sites. So we're taking in these animals.
Greg Willie with the Friendship APL joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Well, we've covered a lot of ground so far and had a lot of fun doing it. Yeah. I want to get into something else here as well. We've talked about how, you know, a lot of times there have been animals that have been mistreated by people, and sometimes people do great things. And you and I were talking off air about 15 minutes ago about how you were able to recover four puppies. The Brunswick Animal Hospital made you aware of this. And one tested positive for parvo, and you mentioned on a Facebook video about a week or so ago, that means that the other few are probably going to test positive for it as well. You guys were looking to raise funding to get these dogs treated, hydrated, all that good stuff, and it turns out the general public really delivered.
Yes, absolutely. Our donors and our supporters are so generous. We can't thank them enough. They really do help us save these animals. And this has become a new trend. And it's an unfortunate trend that we're seeing as the price of veterinary care skyrockets, which it continues to do. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. More and more people are being priced out. And if they can't afford care credit and it's an emergency, and there's just a lot of times there's not much they can do. So in the past, a lot of these animals would have just been euthanized. And now what a lot of these veterinarians are doing are reaching out to local animal shelters to see if we will help incur the cost. If we can meet fundraising goals and help raise the money, we can offset the cost of these animals, bring them in, get them spayed and neutered, get them the care that they need, get them up to date and out into homes. And it's just a cost, right? Because nothing's free. We don't get free animal care, free vet care. We pay for it. A lot of times we get some discounts, and some of these veterinarians are very generous with us. Others, it's just whatever we can get thrown together, So it can be really a real challenge. But these four pups were awesome. They were really, really cute. We got them cared for. We got them into foster homes. Right now they're doing very, very well. We don't even test the other three. We just assume the other three have it and just treat them as such. So we just treat all four of them like they have it. That saves us, we try to save money wherever we can, and running tests. Every one of those tests is like $20. So that's $60 additional. So save your $60. Go ahead and just treat them. And that's how we kind of process this. But now I'm fostering a dog right now. It was living in a, from what I understand, it was living in a factory, and it got run over by a forklift. It was 4 months old. I don't know why you would keep like a 4 month old puppy running around a
factory yeah.
as a shop dog or whatever. And it got run over and broke its leg. They didn't even realize, I think, that it was broken right away because they had it for a couple of days. Finally took it to an emergency clinic and there was no saving the leg. So we ended up having to amputate it. Dog smelled like oil when it came in and grease. So he's now Diesel. And,
okay.
I got Diesel at my place. And that's in my house. And we're fostering him there now as he recovers from that. And we just brought him home yesterday. But it's always like these kind of stories. And the good thing is, like I said, the positive thing about this is that these animals just even a few years ago probably all would have been euthanized. Now these veterinarians are reaching out to shelters, especially a lot of the young veterinarians are reaching out to shelters and saying, hey, we'd like to save these dogs. We'd rather not put them down. We think there's a quality of life available for these animals. Can you step in and intervene? And we're not the only ones doing it. And the trend is going to be that eventually, we're trying to, if the money becomes ideal to a point, the idea would be to start working with people in lower income situations that can't afford these surgeries to help them keep their animals at some point. We're not quite there yet. The finances don't work out where we can do that at this point, but someday I think that's going to be the trend. I think that's going to be the idea is how do we help these people in a time when we know they can't afford these, this isn't, we all have been there. We've all experienced it. We've all had something happen to us where we've been short on cash or we couldn't make up the difference or we've had an emergency or something. And, we know that anxiety and that fear. And if we can step in some way and intervene on their behalf, help them keep their animals, that would be the greatest thing. But I still think, like I said, we're probably a few years away from where that becomes a reality.
What's interesting to me, too, is that when I look at your Facebook page all the time, you guys never really seem to have too big of an issue when it comes to the adoption process. For example, you guys posted I think you guys had close to 10 puppies available the other day that were up for adoption, and now they're all gone. Within just a couple of days, you get people that want to come in, and they want to adopt right away. And it's always nice to know that in this area, you have folks that are willing to step in and help out and really kind of take on that responsibility.
Yeah, and we have a large population in Lorain County. It's not the wealthiest population in the world, and we understand that, but it's a population that cares. It's compassionate. Mahatma Gandhi said you can judge the moral progress of a civilization or society by the way its animals are treated, and I feel like Lorain County is a great place for an animal to end up, to be honest, because there's a lot of people that really love animals out here. And I know people will point to a couple of bad situations, but overall, I really love the population here, and they really show up for us. They really come out and support us. And yeah, we get more puppies in than a lot of other places, and that's great. But, you know, we have a lot of adult dogs there that are also looking for homes that, you know, they don't go quite as quick, and that's true, you know, because we got to find right families. You know, if you person wants kind of one of those bully breed dogs, and they have children in the home, we probably want to direct them towards getting a puppy and adding a puppy to their lives to grow up with the kids. And while adults, we want to kind of direct towards taking the more chancier dogs or the riskier dogs that, you know, may just need a little bit of work and reworking or had bad situations or bad first starts. And, you know, an adult family or a family with older kids can take on those kind of more risky dogs where, you know, you're going to have to put some work and investment in and you'll get this awesome dog, because there's nothing better than rescuing an adult dog, because a lot of times they know bad. So yes, they appreciate the good. So a lot of these dogs become just amazing pets. And we hear that all the time. This is the best dog I ever had. This is the best dog I ever had. I mean, I get some Marley and Me's where you get that, like, first few years are just an absolute nightmare. And, like, everybody's, like, complaining, oh, this dog's just chewing up everything and tore up my house. But they always come back and visit me a few years later, and they're like, oh, that was the best dog I ever had. You know, and that's the greatest thing. Like I always said, that's one of my favorite stories, is the Marley and Me story, because it's a guy that took and reported the entirety of a dog's life. Like, because a lot of times, you know, we forget, we do this with people too. We forget all the bad things. We forget all the little bad times when we come to the end of a life, or we come to the end and tend to remember all the good things. So having that journal of all the puppy stages and how terrible those young years were, where the energy was so high and you just couldn't, it was pulling you down the street and you couldn't get, you know, everything under control. You try training, you try all these other things, and you're just like, holy cow, when will this end? And, you know, then, you know, most of us don't even reflect back on that, because we have so many years and those golden years where the animal's calmed down and it's sitting by our side and we're enjoying that as we watch, you know, Browns game, and we have that dog with its head on our lap, and we remember those good times.
Yes, all those good times. And speaking of good times, before we let you go, I would imagine folks are going to have a good time at the Bark Club, where they could take these Halloween photos with their pets. I was reading up on this earlier. You guys have an event coming up where people are going to dress up their pets. Now, I'm sure that's not the first time you've seen something like this go down, but give us the details on this and why this is such a fun event.
This is one of those things that are like, I'm not always the biggest fan of dressing up, but we've seen some amazing costumes over the years. Some of these people put so much work and effort into getting their animals all dressed up and looking great, and it's amazing. And sometimes I oftentimes think that's almost borderline cruelty to animals. So I see these things and these poor dogs with these things strapped to their heads and these little costumes on, and it's a little overkill. But at the same time, these people have so much fun, and you can just see how much they love their animals when they're down there getting their photos taken. And donations and proceeds, a lot of the proceeds and donations at the Bark Club will be coming to us at Friendship APL, and we always appreciate everything that we get from those, because that does offset a lot of the costs that we have with our animals.
No question about that. All goes towards a wonderful cause. Greg, this is always a pleasure, my friend. Great to have you here in studio sharing some stories. Again, today, foxes, snakes, and who knows what else we might cover the next time we have you in. But we always appreciate you coming in studio.
I love being here, man. I love being here. Anytime.
Absolutely good stuff. Again, Greg Willie with the Friendship APL joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.